show is a part of the Versus the Universe Network. For more information on Versus the Universe, go to versustheuniverse.com. That's VSTheUniverse.com. You got your headphones on? Good. Now let's get on with the show.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Hey everybody, welcome to Digital Dumpster Diving, the 3D cast, where we dig through digital games and movies trying to find something worth our time and maybe yours. Will we find trash or treasure? I'm Matt Peters, and with me as always is Dave Martin. Dave, how are you, sir?
I am fantastic now that we are recording this show.
Yeah, I want to actually address that right off the bat. I want to apologize to the listeners and fans of the Versus the Universe podcast network, which we are proud members of. You know, life happens, ladies and gents, and life happened pretty aggressively on my end over the past few weeks. At the low end of the spectrum, my internet completely went out the night that Dave and I were going to record, and we found out that it was an outage in our area that was strictly confined to my apartment complex. So that's one thing. I mean the podcast studio that I try to front that I have. The other thing, which unfortunately is not as entertaining, is that my maternal grandmother passed. You know, she was 92 years old. She lived a long life. She had 12 kids, one of whom was my mom, of course. And it took a big toll on our family. We celebrated her life today, and I'm thankful for that opportunity. And I know this is a real downer to start the podcast on, but I wanted to let you guys know that I needed this. I needed to come on and talk to my pal Dave about a movie that, you know, let's be honest here, 80% of the time is going to be awful. But I really needed to just have a palate cleanser here. You know, I've been stuck in this mindset for this past week since she passed of just being down in the dumps. And as soon as we got on the chat here, instantly talking to Dave, my mood just improved immensely. So for those of you who are listening to this in order to take your mind off of something that's going on in your life right now, I hope that these conversations that Dave and I have also brighten your day a little bit. And, you know, you're always welcome, as always, to share anything you like with us, even if it's not, like, movie-related or something like that. You can tweet us or email us, and, you know, we'll be happy to talk to you guys. I mean, we're all friends here. We gather together to talk about movies that are, you know, fair to middling, but we get some enjoyment out of them. So, you know, if you feel the need to reach out, let us know. And, you know, like I said, we'll be happy to talk to you. And Dave, thank you for letting me ramble there.
Oh, not a problem. You know, and just to reiterate that, you know, life happens. We are an entertaining show, usually incredibly lighthearted, but life is life. You know, there are ups, there are downs, there are panic-stricken moments. This week, my daughter's been in the hospital. She is out now. She's much better. I'm sure if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you've probably caught a little bit of what's going on with that. She is doing much better now. But, you know, for all of us, life has its scares or its tragedies or its things, and we try to provide a little bit of entertainment, but beyond that, as Matt so eloquently said, we're here. We're all people. We're in this together, and, you know, if you have someone you could talk to, great. If not, I don't care how well you know me. I'm here.
He's there. I'm here. And there you are. And here we are. And we're going to talk today about Once Upon a Time in Mumbai.
Indeed. So, yeah, if for those of you who caught the end of our last episode, there are a lot of new Bollywood movies on Amazon Prime, and we watched one of them. Well, actually,
yes, we
Matt
did.
Watched two of
did.
Them.
right away, you're putting me on Front Street here. That's right. So I watched, unfortunately, I watched the sequel to Once Upon a Time in Mumbai, called Once Upon a Time in Mumbai, Doruba, which wasn't quite clear. I mean, how many movies have you seen that have a title and then when it makes it to home video, it has like a subtitle afterwards or just completely different name, like Die Another Day, or what was it, Live, Die, Repeat, was Edge of Tomorrow or something like that, you know? Whatever. I watched the wrong movie, but I watched the right one, and we're going to talk about the right one now.
And boy, did you watch the wrong one.
Man, I'll throw that in during the spoiler section, because I'll tell you folks this. I'll spoil this part right now. You do not have any reason to watch that sequel unless you are like the most diehard fan. If you're listening right now just to hear what we have to say and you're taking notes about Once Upon a Time in Mumbai and you've seen that sequel and it's, you know, you got the poster hanging on your fridge or wall or whatever. I'll go ahead and tell you guys what's going on with that.
So anyway, for those of you who haven't watched it yet, Once Upon a Time in Mumbai, 2010 film. I'm going to mangle some of these names, but you can laugh at me as I try. AJ Devine, Amran Hashmi, Kangana Ranaut, and it was directed by Milan Luthria. A smuggler rises to power in 1970s Mumbai, and a younger gangster seeks to overthrow him, and a police officer is caught in the middle. With my little knowledge of Bollywood movies, I was expecting something incredibly over the top.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, a lot more subtle than I was expecting for the most part. There were a couple things that really did throw me, but it was also a lot more well made than I was expecting.
You know, I agree with you, man. Like, when I watched the correct one, I was impressed with the way that, in particular, the music was worked into it.
Yes.
I thought that was very well done.
Well, and I wouldn't say they had the best music budget, but there are a couple themes that they would reuse, but even though it was the same thing theme they were reusing, I thought that really works. I'm digging this, especially that heavy guitar laden theme.
For Shoaib.
Yes.
Yeah, that was cool. That was really cool. And that's actually something that they did carry over to the sequel. And I'm tempted to say that's the one good thing about the sequel was that Shoaib's theme returned. And it was kind of weird. It was kind of spoilery because, you know, when I watched the first one after seeing the sequel, I knew that he was about to show up because I heard that guitar riff. I'm like, oh, no, it's about to get real. But yeah, I mean, overall, I thought it was, like you said, not the stereotypical Bollywood movie that you have in mind with the impromptu dance and song and dance numbers and, you know, just all the little quirkiness that you're used to seeing exploited almost on regular TV and other movies when they do stuff like that, like movies like The Love Guru or whatever, you know. Definitely a different class than that. They put some real care into this film.
Yes. Now, there were some musical numbers in here. I thought it worked. I was not expecting them, but it worked well for what it was. It almost felt kind of like a music video worked into the show.
Yes.
I'm assuming it was different singers than the actors themselves, probably.
Yeah, just in the traditional Disney fashion, I would think so, yeah.
There wasn't nearly as much action as I was expecting, but the drama was generally good. Character development was in there, and I kept kind of guessing, okay, which way is this going to go? And there were some things that were fairly expected. I mean, it wasn't completely unpredictable, but it certainly overall was not what I was expecting, and that generally was a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely. You know, the acting was actually pretty good in most parts of it. It was just 10 times less campy than the sequel. Even the film quality itself, the way it was shot, was so cinematic and just so beautiful. You know, in these Bollywood movies, they tend to give you a warning every time someone's smoking a cigarette on screen or something like that. It will say smoking is hazardous to your health or something like that. Fortunately, it only popped up at the very beginning of the movie. Let's talk about the credits for a little bit. That was a little bit annoying. That felt like classic Hollywood almost, the way that 50 different production companies had a hand in this and all had to be represented with their own intro scene.
Yeah, that was a little different than I was expecting.
Yeah, yeah.
Eventually we got through that.
That felt like it was half the movie. And to be fair, the movie was very long. It was like 2.5 hours long.
Although it kind of felt like it went quicker than, you know, it didn't feel like a painful 2.5 hours, but it certainly wasn't a breezy 2.5 hours either.
That's true. That's true. I did give kind of a shout out to the directing, but the editing was, it was kind of sketchy in areas. And I think this might just be, you know, just a cultural thing. I'm not sure, but the dubbing. So, you know how you're watching a TV show and you'll see examples of dubbing when the camera is behind someone's head who's speaking and their head is moving in a way it's not really matching the mannerisms of the words that are coming out of their mouths, you know?
Yeah.
They'll be gesturing and it won't match. But in this movie, they dubbed lines that the actors were saying, and I'm pretty sure it was the same actors, but they dubbed lines that they were saying while the camera was just focused directly on their face. So you could see there was something a little off about it. It was like they were, you know, dubbing it real time or something. It was just very strange.
Well, and especially in the beginning, kind of thing, I kind of got settled in over time, and I guess I stopped noticing it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the beginning, it was pretty jarring, especially when there were things that they were saying in English as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It would kind of take you out of the moment, right? Like, wait, yes. I understood that. Oh, yeah, I don't know the language.
Yeah, I, you know, overall, I think that was pretty solid. Did you want to jump in with your rating on this?
Yeah, let's break down the ratings before we go any further. So, of course, longtime listeners of the show know that we have our classic digital dumpster diving rating scale, starting all the way down at the bottom at Toxic Sludge, which, of course, is just, you know, bottom, just awful. Can't do anything with it. Don't even watch it. Hazardous. It has moments, but overall, it's not really worth sitting through the film. Reusable. You know, it's a movie that you enjoy, but you definitely acknowledge that it has faults. And then, of course, the top tier, Treasure, a diamond in the rough, a very rare gift given out to the movies that we watch and the games that we play. So, yeah, I did give it a rating, and that rating would be reusable. And again, to be fair, and I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, if I hadn't watched that second one first, I may have been a little less forgiving with what I saw in this film, which we'll get into in the spoiler section of our conversation. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, it felt like a 70s or 80s type of movie, especially because of the time period it was set in, of course. But, you know, in a film where we see two discotheques almost back to back that were drastically different. It felt dated in that way without acknowledging it head on. But yeah, the story was good. You know, it's a good rise of power sort of film. Everybody loves that sort of thing because you don't know if the protagonist is ultimately good or if he's going to turn to the dark side. So it kept you guessing. And I like that. I like that a lot. So it gets a reusable for me.
Yeah, I also gave it a reusable. I was coming slightly from the other side because I was really expecting a cheesy ham fest.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of hoping for that. You know, sometimes that's just what you want in a movie. And that's what I was hoping for with this and expecting.
Uh-huh.
And it was a well-made movie overall that despite my expectations for some, despite it not being at all what I expected, I enjoyed it. It was overall well done. I wouldn't say it's anywhere near Treasure for me.
No.
But I really enjoyed this movie.
So you're giving it a reusable as well, is that right?
Indeed, sir. Reusable from both of us.
Nice. Okay. All right. So we are in agreement, and we hope that you guys are in agreement as well. Hopefully you get a chance to watch the movie along with us. If not, go ahead and stop the podcast here. Check it out. Meet us, you know, right back here where you were before. And we're going to talk about a little bit of spoiler-heavy content at this point. So you've been warned. All right. Now that our due diligence is over, let's talk about Once Upon a Time in Mumbai. So Shoaib, what a jerk, right?
Oh, man, that guy. That guy.
That guy. So, yeah, going back to what you were talking about with with his theme song. Yeah, he had this like, yeah, I'm a bad dude sort of theme song from the time he was a child. Like when he was he was going around shaking down payphones to get money out. And, you know, the cops stopped him and everything. And they're like, oh, you know, you're going to go to jail. This little kid with his, he had a crony. He had a Milhouse with him, basically. He got in this cop's face and he's telling him, you know, I'm going to remember this and I'm going to pay you back in spades. And, you know, one day I'm going to be running the police and my dad's an officer. And you'll see every time I get hit, I'm giving you twice as much back. So, yeah, he had a little chip on his shoulder and he thought he was invincible. And yeah, his dad was kind of like, you know, heavy handed and everything too. But yeah, he was just a little jerk, man.
Yeah, he was. And like, you kept, they did a surprising job almost making him likable despite, I mean, if we were to describe pretty much everything he did in the movie, he's a completely unlikable character.
Yes, yes.
But they did a good job of making you not absolutely hate him anyway. I mean, they brought his character out enough that even though you knew he was not a good guy, he still had his appeal.
That's true. That's true. You know, it happens that way for a lot of these crime movies. There's still the protagonist who's on the wrong side of the law, almost like The Departed. You know, it's like, well, you know, he's a criminal, but Leo DiCaprio's a charming guy, so.
Well, and you know, just going on that note, I'm a big fan of character development. And I wouldn't say this is the shining example of character development, but I love Star Wars. I probably cared more about these characters than any of the characters in the prequels.
Wow, that's saying a lot, man. You're just going out on that limb.
George Lucas is, especially in his later years, not a master of character development.
That's fair. That is fair. Yeah, it's more about the setting and the scenery than the characters themselves. That's true. There's a big debate going on, if I can go on a little side note for a second there. There's a big debate going on about whether or not Obi-Wan is a hero or just a complete jerk. Because if you go back and compare the things he said to what he did, yeah, it doesn't quite add up. But dipping back into the film, I was actually pretty impressed with Randeep Hooda, who played the police officer at the beginning of the film, Agnew Wilson. He was actually pretty cool. But what stuck out to me originally about him is that he basically looked like an Indian Ben Affleck. Like, if you just look at his jawline and everything, mm-hmm. like, He could be Batman, totally Batman.
Yeah, he was definitely a good looking guy.
Yeah, yeah, they wanted him. They wanted his face to be the first thing that you saw, and rightly so, because like you said, he's a good looking dude. So yeah, he provided the framing sequence for the movie, which was the bombings and everything like that. And he basically is trying to take accountability for the events that are going on after the rise of Shoaib to power.
Well, and it was interesting. I really liked a lot of how they did it because, you know, this comic's going to span the whole movie, but they basically set up, okay, here's where we are today, here's how we got here, and he's the one who narrates the whole story of the rise of Sultan Mirza.
Yeah.
And then later of Shoaib. And explains his role in basically screwing things up. But one of the things that I liked about it was that, in my interpretation, his explanation of it was accurate from his perspective, mm-hmm. but it was still wrong. because part of it, he says, it was my fault because I picked the wrong man and I judged, you know, basically two mobsters to be equal in danger. And I was using one to go after the other. And I think that's what a person would say, even though he's admitting guilt, he's still justifying it to himself. But my interpretation of it was the real mistake he made was not picking one over the other, but assuming he could go around the law.
Yeah.
Because that's really what went wrong. I mean, it wasn't that he picked one over the other. It was that he didn't do his job as a means of trying to go after one of the mobsters.
Yeah.
I felt that that was both realistic and yet gave you the chance to interpret it for yourself. Because I think that is what he would have said, but that doesn't mean that we the viewer have to agree with it.
That's true. And just touching on what you were saying about them establishing Sultan as, you know, not a completely irredeemable character. They showed a portion of the film where I guess there was not a train robbery. It was they were trying to smuggle something, you know, through some back roads. And they had to basically deconstruct a rail line in order to get their truck over that area. And of course, there's a train coming, which is chock full of people.
And I'm going to interrupt you here just for a second. Why did they actually have to disassemble that?
Yeah.
That made no sense to me.
It looked like a sturdy truck, right? Like, they could have just drove over it. Or at least tried to, but maybe the cargo was super, you know, loose and it would ruin the product if they drove over it or make them explode. I don't know. I don't know. You know, just go with it. It's fine.
Just suspend your disbelief for that scene.
Yeah. So the point is that he, instead of leaving the train tracks disassembled, he goes back and he risks his life, his very life, to put the train tracks back together. And there's this like Superman moment where he's holding the bar in place while the train is driving over the track just to make sure nobody gets hurt. That was a pretty cool establishing scene there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I kind of dug that. So let's talk a little bit about the love interest here. What was her name? It was Rahana, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, if it wasn't Rahana before, it's Rahana now.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And how, like, you know, Sultan starts investing his dirty money in her movies and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, his hands aren't completely clean, but, you know, he still has altruistic reasons for doing what he does. He's a lot like Wilson Fisk, in a way. As long as it's not Daredevil, he's cool. So were there any other moments in the film that stuck out to you, really?
I don't know. I thought Shoaib was looking to be sort of redeemable. Up until basically there's a moment where basically he keeps running and getting in run-ins with the law, and at one point his father, who's a police officer, realizes that Sultan Mirza has power and influence, goes outside the law to try to get help for his son to be able to run a successful legitimate business.
Yeah.
And later, that just doesn't work out. But like that scene in the shop, Shoaib's significant other gets accused of being a thief because he gives her some jewelry that he stole.
Yes.
And she's in a jewelry store, and the person that they robbed comes in, and he recognizes her stuff.
Of all the jewelry stores in Mumbai.
And I was like really hoping that, like, I don't know, I just hope for characters to be redeemable in most shows. It's just one of my quirks.
Yeah.
And then, like, no, he said no, this is definitely not what's going to happen. And from there on out, he kind of, like, not just was a jerk overall, but the way he looked at her was like, you know, it's bad enough that you treat other people like garbage, but you can't look at her like that. And then later he realized that he's going to treat her like garbage too.
Yeah.
But you know, that scene was just like one of those scenes where my hope for him as a redeemable character got shattered. And it made me sad.
Yeah, but, you know, it was interesting enough to show, like, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. So Sultan's downfall was really the fact that he had a soft spot in a lot of different ways, is that he trusted in Shoaib. He felt the same way you did, that maybe there was something redeemable about him. He believed in love. He believed in fair play. But, you know, he was still on the wrong side of the law. So, you know, when you run with. Yeah, I don't have a parable here. And that actually brings me to the rhetoric that Shoaib was spouting. Now, I wondered about that because, you know, again, dipping back to the second film, he had his entire dialogue was just basically made of different sayings and parables that he would come up with. And him and his cronies would go back and forth with these, you know, insightful phrases as if it was like, you know, proving a point in some sort of way. Like, you know, hey, beans don't burn on the grill, so move on up. Something like that. So I looked into it, and I'm about to break the one rule that we established right before we tried to record this episode last time. It's actually the fact that Shoaib shares his name with an Islamic prophet who also had a lot of different sayings like that. And it's his name actually means he who shows the right path. So I think they really pulled heavily from his inspiration for the character, you know, in that regard at least. So that was kind of interesting to me that they did put that much thought into the character.
That is definitely cool. That adds a little bit more to it, and I'm still not going to watch the sequel.
No, you definitely should not. The sequel feels like a fan film. It feels like somebody was like, "All right, look, we need a follow up." It's the Blair Witch 2 to Blair Witch Project. It's the Grease 2 to Grease. That's how bad it is. So yeah, I think somebody should create a show of rhetoric quote generator, because that would be entertaining. Another thing that was cool about both movies, but we'll touch on the first one specifically, is the fact that, you know, of course, the majority of the cast was Indian. And every now and then you would see, you know, someone of European origin or, you know, a white person just sprinkled in, basically. And it's like, oh, that's how that is. It was kind of cool. It was like, wow, it's like the white folks are guest stars in this film. That's that's unique. But during some of the dance numbers, they did have a lot of white folks mixed in with the Indian folks. They were doing the dance routines and everything like that. I did notice that. So I don't know if specifically like the company they worked with for the choreography had their own troupe that maybe traveled or something like that. But it was noticeable. Not enough to really like take me out of the moment. It's like, okay, yeah, okay, they're traveling abroad. They're dancing. You know, that's fine. But yeah, it was definitely noticeable.
Well, and I don't claim to know much of the modern history of India, but I imagine with as long as the British occupation was in place, there would probably still be some people of European descent who look very clearly not native Indian who probably still live there.
That is a very valid point. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, man, again, I really enjoyed this movie. And, yeah, you know, usually this would be the point where I say they should make a sequel. They definitely should not have made a sequel. And I warn you, folks, unless you are super curious to see what I suffered through, do not watch that sequel. It's so bad that I couldn't even tell that they were just retreading things that happened in the original film. One thing about that sequel that was interesting, the way that Sultan first appeared on the screen in Once Upon a Time in Mumbai, he was a child, and he actually was his hometown was hit by a flood. He was from Madras, and he arrived in Mumbai by like some type of boat. And at the end of the sequel, once they do away with Shoaib, he falls on a very similar looking boat and he starts to float away from Mumbai. So that was kind of cool symbolism, and I feel like maybe That's the scene they had in mind that they built the sequel around. Everything else is hot garbage.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree on any of that, although I would like to see... It may be too late now, given that this was a 2010 film.
Yeah.
And given that they already made a sequel and it was kind of hot garbage, but... I would have liked to have seen a sequel with the original cast and production company. Because were there any of the actors who were the same? I know several of them were different. Were any of the actors the same in the sequel?
Not that I noticed, no. In fact, the guy that played Shoaib in the sequel was very hammy compared to the guy that played him in the original. So it was unfortunate they couldn't even get him back.
You know, and I it's not like we're going to have any saver, but I would like to see a sequel with the original cast and crew. That would be well done. But that ship has sailed. And
Yes.
All
right. So if you folks agree, disagree, just want to tell us, you know, hey, please don't review movies with subtitles anymore. Just let us know. You can email us. You can Twitter us. Just search for the 3D cast and we'll appear magically on your computer screen or your phone, your mobile device, as they say.
Or behind your office chair.
Probably not that, but we'll go with it. also, don't forget to rate us on iTunes, because a lot of you haven't done that yet. And I would love to know what you think about this. That Matt Peters is so sexy. I love it when he's on the microphone. Don't do that, though, please. That's weird.
Don't do that. Do that. And for those of you who hate Apple products, we are on Google Play as well. Mm-hmm. So if you want to swing that direction, we are available on Google Play.
That's right. So, yeah. So for our next film, we're going to be watching Rocket Ship XM, made in 1950, available for streaming on Amazon, I believe, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. So four men and a girl blast into space on mankind's first expedition to the moon. But due to a if I could talk, I'd say cataclysmic. A cataclysmic event in space. Their ship is sent hurling out of control towards the planet Mars. Suspenseful terror as the crew fights for their life on a war-ravaged world with radiation-riddled nightmare creatures. Oh, yeah. The climax makes this one makes this one of the most powerful and unforgettable science fiction movies ever made. Rocket Ship XM was deftly brought to the screen by famed writer-director Kurt Newman, long considered the definitive space exploration film of the 50s, a genuine classic with a power that has spanned the decades. I'm very excited about this, man. Rocket ships are my jam.
You know, and we'll just have to find out if that glowing synopsis does... if the movie lives up to that or not.
I really hope it doesn't, because that was like so cool that, you know, I just wanted to just kind of like crash and burn. It's just going to be like, there's a rocket ship. It goes to space. Womp womp. That's it.
With Lloyd Bridges, what could go wrong?
Exactly. Well, we're going to find out. And so will you next time on Digital Dumpster Diving. I'm Matt Peters.
And I'm Dave Martin. It's got to be better next time.
It's got to be better next time. Thanks for listening, folks.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you later.
Humans.
Dating is fun.
Playing games is fun.
Combining the two can be difficult.
Luckily, the Cooperatives Podcast is here.
I'm Liz.
And I'm Aaron, and we're a real-life human couple.
We're definitely not robots.
Every other week, we'll discuss the joys and sorrows of gaming with the significant other.
Or other people, generally.
Yeah.
We'll play a game, discuss it, and even learn a little something about each other along the way.
So roll the die and head to facebook.com/cooperativespod and get updates and subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher.
The Cooperatives Podcast, proudly a part of the Versus the Universe Network.
All right, do we tell them that we're robots now?
No, we need to keep up the act.
Oh, okay. Download an episode today, Meat Sacks.
Very convincing.
Thank you.